Blog Talk Radio.
Spirit of Truth Ministry now presents The Bible on Trial, a show that tests the teachings of Christianity against the words and the teachings that Jesus Christ gave to his own eyewitness disciples while he was here on earth. Join us for a challenging and unique study into truth, justice, and the kingdom of heaven.
Well, welcome all to this edition of the Bible on Trial. Today is May Day 2020, and we're delighted that you've taken a few minutes out of your busy schedule to join us today for our study. We will be getting going here in just a minute, but I am going to let you know that I will be, in just a second, putting up some information on our chat room concerning our websites. Our primary website is spiritoftruthministry.net. There you will find our book, The Spirit of the Church, by Rick Sterling and me. And in just a minute or two, I'm going to have Dr. Don give you his impression of that book. We do this occasionally just so that people, we can keep current with it. And believe it or not, the book, even though it was published in 2007, is still pretty current. We also have a secondary website at spiritoftruthministry.net/SM. There you will find a lot of writing, especially in the must-read section. There is a description on our book page about how our book came to be, and the introduction for the book is printed there. But since you can go to our regular website at spiritoftruthministry.net and go to our book and read it there for free, that's pretty moot by now. So let's have prayer and we will get started. Father in heaven, Jesus Christ, Holy Spirit, grant us a peaceful time today as we come aside and learn the truth. Thank you for making the truth available to us through the words of Jesus Christ that God gave him and that he gave to his disciples, and the words of God that God gave the prophets and Moses in the Old Testament. So I pray, Father, right now that you will grant us these things in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. Well, hang on here. Let me get Rick up and running. Good morning, Rick. How are you?
Good morning. Doing
and
well.
Larry, are you up?
Mayday, mayday, mayday.
That's right, mayday. Good. And Don, how are you?
Good morning.
Hey, Don, would you just tell us a little bit about the book?
Happy May Day to all of you.
You bet.
And in military terms, May Day means distress. I don't know that way, but considering what we're in these days, probably it is a distress call.
The word May Day in French means come to my aid. And this was said from the earliest times of radio transmission, when a plane would be going down, they would say, Mayday, Mayday, and that meant come to my aid. Anyway, Don, tell us about the book, The Spirit of the Church.
I'm happy for the historical input. I didn't know that.
Oh, cool.
Okay. On my impairment, not being able to talk, I'm going to make my comments very abbreviated this morning. Dennis asked me to tell the about the book that he and Rick wrote back in 2007, or was published in 2007. You know, that's amazing. I think that's already 13 years ago. Can you still hear me?
Oh, yes. Certainly.
Yeah, everything's really silent, so I wanted to make sure. Anyway, just a quick story. I spent 15 intense years in a very major preventive medicine department in a large hospital system. And every so often there would be a professor's luncheon. And one day, a dear physician friend of mine who is from another country, his background is from another country, he was a very prominent internist. And he quietly sat beside me and we're talking, and he said this. He said, "Don, I just purchased this book." And he said, "The book makes me so angry, I can't even read it. Would you like to see it?" Well, I guess I've always had this curiosity thing, which I think all of us had. Otherwise, we wouldn't have this study group that we have. So I said, "I would love to see it." So later on that day, he came to my office, and he had it wrapped up in a paper bag, and he handed it to me. He says, "Do not leave this in your office. Take it home." And it was a brand new book. And I wasn't about it except that it was written by a United States congressman. This book was authored by a congressman of the United States of America. And so I took it home, and I'm going, whoa. And then for a few months after that, you could not purchase this book in any bookstore. They simply wouldn't sell it to you. So any curious person would say, "Well, wait a minute, what is in that book?" Remember, this was written by a congressman of the United States of America. This doctor was so upset he couldn't read it. And you could not buy this book. So that is the setting by which I would like to talk about the book Dennis has asked me to comment on. This is an incredible book. It's entitled Spirit of the Church. It has a very, very interesting cover. And I want everybody out there who may be listening to think, what is something you could read that would make you so upset you couldn't read it? What could anybody write that would make you so upset that you couldn't read it? Well, all of you people listening, you know, our group, Rick, Larry, Dr. Rich is gone. Anybody that's in our group knows that this book, absolutely, the book that Dennis is talking about, absolutely enraged people. And I remember Dr. Rich telling me that he had an old friend from childhood days who now is a, you know, big college professor in a Christian college. And he was so upset by reading this book that he said, "I'm destroying it. Don't ever send me anything like this again." And absolutely terminated their friendship that they'd had since childhood. People out there listening, audience, this is an incredible book that Dennis and Rick put together in a remarkable fashion. Step by step by step, explaining the beautiful Christian things. You know, that's probably not the proper term. Things about Jesus, things about truth. And it is so contrary and so cross-grained to what people hold dear and believe, they can't even force themselves to read this book. So based on that, I would encourage anybody out there listening, audience, I think, Dennis, you can make you say that it's available now on the internet. You can read it. Get up the courage and read this book, because the Bible references are all there. It's beautifully laid out. And one of the beautiful things that you did, Dennis and Rick, is there's an old thing in teaching. We're teachers. You get up in front of a class, you tell them what you're going to tell them, then you tell them, and then you tell them what you told them. And this book is written in that fashion. The authors tell what they have to tell, and then they can review what they just told you. And it's beautifully put together. So in this time, and I wrote a very lengthy message to a dear friend this morning based on all of our shutdown time here and how many interesting things. And I suspicion once this is over, you know, whatever phase we're in now is over, there's going to be a throng. I use the term throng of awakened people. This time of silence has caused a lot of people to do some thinking. And once this is over, there's going to be a throng of awakened people. And those of us who love and want to promote truth, our job is even going to get more intense, because a lot of people are going to ask questions and want to know. So the message that Jesus gave us 2,000 years ago, which is beautifully recorded in Matthew and John in the New Testament, people are going to want to know about that. And so we need to prepare ourselves to be able to answer them and to tell them. So, Dennis, that's my take. That's my thing on the book this morning.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Don. And you can find the book at spiritoftruthministry.net. You can go to the search box, type in the Spirit of the Church, and it will take you right there. So let us have prayer, and we will – no, we already did have prayer, didn't we? So let's get started. There you go, Rick.
Well, I typically don't give a title to the presentation that I do, but today, if I were to give a title to this, it would be Waiting for the Judgment. I don't imagine that there are many people who are waiting for judgment. They may be waiting for the Lord to come so that he can take them to a much better place. But if that is what you are doing, if you are waiting for the return of the Messiah, then you might just as well be waiting for the judgment, because they are one and the same. Harvest is the symbol used for the judgment. The fruit that has ripened is either good or bad. The good fruit, which has been represented as grains of wheat, grains of barley, grains of rye, grapes, figs, you name it. The fruit is picked when it's ripe. The good fruit goes into the barns of the master. The bad is tied up in bundles and is burned. Waiting for the judgment. What type, what is the condition? What is our condition? Because that determines whether we are good fruit or bad fruit. I'm going to start with this text in John chapter 12. The setting is that it was just before Passover. And Jesus is in a feast. And at the feast, there were some Greeks. The Greeks were interested in what they had heard about this man, Jesus, and they wanted to meet him because they believed him to be at the very least, a demigod. So they went up to Philip. He and they asked, "Sir, we should like to see Jesus. So Philip went and told Andrew, and Andrew and Philip together went to tell Jesus. We're in John chapter 12. Starting with verse 23. Jesus replied to them, "Oh, the hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. I tell you most solemnly, unless a wheat grain falls on the ground and dies, it remains only a single grain. But if it dies, it yields a rich harvest. Anyone who loves..." Yes.
I'm sorry, could you give me the text again? I'm at Matthew 12:23, and I'm not seeing the same thing that
John
you were.
John 12:23.
Okay, yeah, you said Matthew. I'm sorry. At least I heard that. Okay, John 12. Got it.
Yes. And I'm on verse 25 right now. "Anyone who loves his life loses it. Anyone who hates his life in this world will keep it for the eternal life. If a man serves me, he must follow me wherever I am. My servant will be there too. If anyone serves me, my Father will honor him. Now my soul is troubled. What shall I say? Father, save me from this hour. But it was for this very reason that I have come to this hour. Father, glorify your name." A voice came from heaven, "I have glorified it, and I will glorify it again." People standing by who heard this said it was a clap of thunder. Others said it was an angel speaking to him. Jesus answered, "It was not for my sake that this voice came, but for yours. I want you to pay particular attention to the next two verses. Now sentence is being passed on this world. Now the prince of this world is to be overthrown. And when I am lifted up from the earth, I shall draw all men to myself." Now sentence is being passed on this world. What do you think that means? What is a sentence? What does it mean to pass a sentence? What is a sentence?
A sentence is what happens after judgment. And the sentence is the punishment or reward for whatever has been judged.
Yes, I like to look at it as, you know, what is a sentence? Well, it's a string of words that convey information that end with a period. So, sentence being passed on the world is a proclamation of judgment. And it says, he says, now the prince of this world is to be overthrown. Well, who is the prince of this world?
Well, Rick, that would be Satan, although if you ask a born-again Christian, most of them will say that Jesus is the king or the ruler of this world.
Or the prince. He can be he's a prince because he is the son of the king, the son of God, God who owns the universe and everything in it, which includes the earth. So the prince of this world is, so that's future to be, that's future, overthrown. And when I am lifted up from the earth, I shall draw all men to myself. Encapsulated in that statement is a statement of judgment, and in essence, what it is all about. What happened in the garden of the paradise of God was a triumph by the prince of this world, who was successful in deceiving the man and the woman through whom God was going to judge the humans of earth, and they would make a decision. The decision is, would they worship and obey the true God who created them, or would they worship and obey the gods of this world who had deceived them? By believing the lie and acting on that lie in disobeying their creator, the man and the woman could no longer fulfill the purpose for which they were created. This had to be done by another. It had to be done by flesh and blood, but this individual, to qualify, needed to precede the man who was created and who disobeyed, but he also needed to be born in his line, his family. So he needed to be a son of God and a son of man in order to redeem the sons of man. The prince of this world held authority over the people of this world. At this point in time, what the Son of God is saying is, now sentence is being passed on this world. In that statement, he's saying, I have met my period of obedience, of demonstrating all that I have met all of the requirements of righteousness up to the point of death. He's right there, very shortly after this. Just 4 days or so, he will be arrested. He will be falsely accused, and he will be condemned to death. What we see here is that judgment has come upon the prince of this world. He says, now the prince of this world is to be overthrown. What is the future involved in this? Why does he put this in the future? Because the overthrow of the prince of this world involves one thing. How many people will believe his lies? How many people will willingly accept his deceptions? How many people will reject his lies and will accept the true prince of this world?
Rick,
and
may I make
that's
a comment
what he
here?
Means. That's what he means when he says, I shall draw all men to myself. Did you say something, Dennis?
Yeah, I just wanted to make a quick comment. I have been watching some TED programs, which I find very fascinating. These are, for the most part, very deep thinkers. And I watched one just recently where the presenter, who was a professor at a college, and I never expected someone like him to say this, he said the majority, his premise was that the majority was never right. And he gave a wonderful presentation. His didactic was clear and concise about how people who do not go along with the standard presentations of truth are always the ones that are right about whatever it is that they are going against, and he showed the reason. If we look at the world of politics today in the United States and in the world, you can actually see what you have just said presenting itself very clearly. And, you know, we don't get involved in politics here very much, except as a reference. And I'm referencing the fact that if you believe what the mainstream media says, everyone who believes that our response to the coronavirus and many other things, if it is based in what the government says is true, it has to be right. And yet there are those of us who realize that for the most part, most of the things that they say about it actually can't be right given the actual statistics involved. So what you said, Rick, goes to this, the very heart of this. How many people are going to believe the truth when it's presented to them? Probably very few, because it is much easier. Lies are much easier to believe because they are constructed that way. Satan constructs the lies to sound enough like the truth so that when you hear the truth, you can say, oh, you know, I already have the truth. I don't need anything else. Whatever this other person is saying, I don't need it. And this is one of the reasons why the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the doctors of the law were so frustrated with Jesus, is because the people were believing him and not believing them.
Here's a thought for those voters out there who have a right to vote. Think of this. The person that you vote for, what they do, how they operate, what their character is to all people who vote for a person, if they're a God-fearing person, they're honest, they're true, they do the right thing, that is, I'm trying to figure out how to say this, but it, whoever you vote for, you become a participant in their actions because they are representing you. So if you vote for a scoundrel, that is what you are participating in nefarious activity. So think about that before you vote. Second verse, verse 32, when he says, "And when I am lifted up from the earth, I shall draw all men to myself." What does he mean, "and when I am lifted up to the earth"? There's a little bit of confusion with the next verse where John says, "By these words he indicated the kind of death he would die." And we think about, well, he was hung on a cross, and the cross, he was lifted up and placed in a deep hole. But I think what is meant here is he's talking about his resurrection, when he is lifted up from the quote-unquote heart of the earth. He's laid to rest in the earth, and then he is going to be lifted up from the earth. And when he does that, he will then be able to draw all men who are willing to be drawn, because the word "draw" is key there. If you the word "draw out" and just say all men will be gathered to myself or something, drawing is they are not part of his group, his kingdom, his disciples. They're off somewhere else. But because he has been raised up from the earth, he is alive, he will be able to, because he says, "I shall," he will be able to draw all men to himself. The way he draws to him is through the words that he left. They search for the truth. They learn the truth. They live the truth, and by that means, they come to be a part of his kingdom. They come to be to serve him, to be his servants, to work on behalf of his kingdom. Now, the crowd has a disconnect here. They question something, and it is important for us to know what it is they're questioning. They say, "The law has taught us that the Messiah will remain forever. How can you say the Son of Man must be lifted up? Who is this Son of Man?" Now, what the people are saying is, if you're the Messiah, and that's what you have inferred, if not said, that you who you are, our Bible says this about the Messiah, that when he comes, he will remain forever. He will be seated on the throne of David. He will gather all of the people of Israel, and he will overthrow the Roman authority, and Israel, the kingdom of Israel, will be the mightiest kingdom in the world. That's what they had learned from their law. But that is not what he is saying. So, first of all, they see that he is not consistent with their law. And if anyone, if they saw that anyone was inconsistent with the law, there was confirmation that they could not be from God and they could not be the Messiah. And in effect, they were a lawbreaker. So they said, "Who is this Son of Man?" Then Jesus said, "The light will be with you only a little longer now. Walk while you have the light." And get the picture here of being drawn, because if you are somewhere and you need to be somewhere else, the only way you can get there is by leaving where you presently are and going to where you need to be. Walking is a way of doing that. Riding your bike, driving your car, flying in a plane, whatever. The symbolism is that where you are right now is not in the light. And you need to be where the light is. And the only way that you are going to get to where the light is to leave where you are now and walk to where the light is. And that journey is done through learning the truth. It's you can't hike to where the light is, literally. You have to leave what you hold to and believe. As they were saying, the law says that the Messiah will remain forever. He's saying you need to know the truth. He's not saying that the law is wrong. What he's saying is that what you've been taught about the law is wrong. That the reality which you have right now is different than what the law was talking about when it said the Messiah would come and take the throne of David. That reality doesn't work now because you failed. It wasn't that God has changed the plan somehow. It was that the people had failed to meet the specific requirements that the angel Gabriel gave to Daniel in that right after his prayer, recorded in Daniel 9. There was a list of specific requirements, accomplishments that the people needed to meet and to accomplish before that promise that the Messiah would come and take the throne of David. But they hadn't been told that. And the priests certainly hadn't been working with the people to bring them to that point. So the reality of the Messiah remaining forever had not been the path, so to speak, to going from darkness to light that they were required to take in order to have that reality become fact. That's what I'm saying to all of those who are listening. We all have started our life, our journey, if you will, in darkness. The light has already come. The light came, was here, taught his disciples for about a little more than a year, and then he left. He said, the light is only going to be with you a little longer. Walk while you have the light. The only way to get out of the darkness is to learn the teaching, the testimony of the Son of God. That's the only way to get out of the darkness. Not to, and you have to be careful that what you are following is not someone proclaiming to be an apostle, that they are getting their information from God. What you must be learning from is from the words that the light brought with him from the Father, gave to his eyewitness disciples, gave them the great commission to take the words that he had taught them and to teach them to all others who would listen. And he said, there will be others who will come who will say that I was the Messiah. I was the Christ, the anointed one. But yet they will teach a totally different message than what I taught. You are responsible. You are responsible for yourself to make sure that you are not deceived. And he said that just before he gave them the prophecy that is recorded in Matthew 24 and 25. The light will be with you only a little longer now. Walk while you have the light, or the dark will overtake you. When the dark overtakes you, when you are overtaken by the darkness, that is the darkness triumphs over you. You have allowed yourself to be engulfed in darkness. That's where you're comfortable. That's where you're used to living. That's what you feel secure in. You have to walk. You have to move out of the darkness to the light, or the dark will overtake you. It will subdue you. It will triumph over you.
Rick, there are so many people, though, who claim Christianity as their religion, that believe that by simply stating that they love Jesus, they acknowledge Jesus as the Christ, they believe without a doubt that the light is already in them and that darkness can never overcome that light. And so when they are told what you have just said, they will simply say, oh, I'm already there.
When the dark overtakes you, you have been fully deceived into believing and confirming that you are in the light. There are none so deceived as those who believe they are in the light when they have been overtaken by the darkness. Anyone,
exactly.
Anyone who walks in dark does not know where he's going. He believes he knows where he's going, but he does not know where he's going. While you still have the light, believe in the light, and you will become sons of the light. Having said this, Jesus left them and kept himself hidden. And the reason he kept himself hidden is he knew that the chief priests, the administrators of the law, the authorities on the law, were in desperation looking for the opportunity to arrest him and to get rid of him, because he'd already performed a quote-unquote wonder that could not be replicated by any human being. So they knew that he had God abilities. He had resurrected a dead man back to life who was confirmed by hundreds of witnesses to be dead, and this was nothing that could be used to deceive people with. There, I want to talk a little bit about what is going on today and tie it into this. And tomorrow we're going to continue with the subject of light and dark and judgment and what God's plan from the time that he created the man and the woman and placed them in the garden to today. I believe sincerely that we are in the end of days. There's a war going on right now, and a lot of people are not aware of it, and that is it's important to those who are conducting the war that the people are not aware of it. We are in a spiritual war. The spirit, and part of that war is the whole war is being fought with, on one side is the truth, and on one side is deception. I'm going to tell you what I believe. This does not mean that this is what happened, but I have followed a logical process just like I do when I study the Bible. Logical process, which leads me to logical conclusions. It may not necessarily be right, but if you continue to work to vet what you your conclusions, to test them, in this situation, the reason that you can't come to a final conclusion is because there's so much deception going on, lies being told. The whole thing is in a cloud of mystery. There is a deep state cabal who is being managed and is under the authority of the prince of this world. Now, as we read earlier, the prince of this world has already been judged, and he's been thrown out. We're going to talk about that tomorrow. His whole, and the reason that he was not destroyed when he was judged, the reason that he was cast out of, or he was condemned and was cast out of the heavens, and not he and his instigators with him were not put to death at that time, were not destroyed at that time, is because judgment had not taken place on the earth that he had deceived. So he had a place to go, and the spiritual insurrectionists that had joined in his insurrection were all cast out of the heavens, and they were confined now to the earth. He set to work immediately to keep the whole world in darkness. He worked very hard to try to destroy the testimony of the Son of God. That was his prime focus at the time, because if he could keep the light, the truth, from continuing on until the and on into the future, there would be no last day, no end of days, no final judgment. It would end in a cataclysm where the whole world would be in the same condition that it was at the time of the flood, and there wouldn't be any righteous because he had managed to kill the truth. So it didn't survive. And so that's what his hope was. That's what he worked very hard to accomplish. And he used the Universal Christian Church quite successfully, which we know of now as the Catholic Church, in his effort to completely destroy the truth. But he didn't accomplish that. So now he's working hard to... Well, he probably still hopes to get everyone on his side in his kingdom, because we all start out in his kingdom. He doesn't want to lose anybody. He can't lose anybody. And so what we have, those that are working on behalf of the evil one of whom I know for sure is a stealth fighter, a stealth bomber. He's an individual who presents himself as humanitarian. He has a foundation that he, you know, does quote unquote good things for the countries of the world. But he is one of the most evil people who has ever lived. And he is the one greatly responsible for what is going on right now. What China has done, in essence, is it has dropped an atomic bomb on the rest of the world with this pandemic. And it is very interesting to me that 4 years ago, Bill Gates stood up on the stage of a presentation group. Dennis talked about TED Talks earlier at the start this morning. And he walked out on stage with a hand dolly, and it had a huge sealed 50-gallon or 100-gallon drum. And on the screen behind him was the giant TED screen, was the mushroom cloud of an atomic explosion. And he said, most of us growing up, we're told that this is how the world would end, and he pointed at the mushroom-shaped cloud behind him. And then he talked about how his parents had made a bomb shelter in their backyard, and the sealed drum that he'd wheeled out on this hand cart was similar to the sealed drum that was in their bomb shelter, that contained food and necessities so that they could survive until it was safe to come out of the underground bomb shelter. But he said, you know, there's something more deadly than an atomic bomb. Then he proceeded to describe what a pathogenic virus could do if released throughout the world. And that it could end up being more destructive than an atomic bomb. Now, you wouldn't destroy any buildings. You wouldn't destroy the environment. All you would do is destroy a lot of people. And he was presenting this in the light of population control. We needed to get the world down in population, down to a manageable population. Of course, he's talking about the environment and so on like that. But actually, I knew what he was talking about. These guys are all about control. They want to control the people of the world. And if you can get a population of 7 billion people down to 1 million people, they're a lot easier to control. I believe, like I said, I'm not saying that this is what happened. I'm just saying this is what I believe happened. Is that Bill Gates et al. Controls the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party. They were developing bioweapons in the virology lab in Wuhan. It was purposely infected into a person or persons in the lab who went out and infected others. Nobody knows that they're infected. You're walking on the street and somebody walks by and you can be infected. Then, of course, China decided that they were not going to allow flights from Wuhan to other parts of China, but there were no restriction on flights from Wuhan to the rest of the world. And hundreds of thousands of people were flying to other parts of the world, feeding the virus all over the world. So in essence, it was like China, but it wasn't China, it was actually the deep state cabal, had just dropped an atomic bomb on the rest of the world. We are in the end of days, not because of the virus. We're in the end of days because there now has come a time when God, the true God, has people prepared and ready to bring about the end. Tomorrow, we will continue on with this.
Thank you, Rick, and thank you all for being here today. We encourage you to make use of our facilities here at Blog Talk Radio by going to our episode page. There you can download any number of well over 1,000 programs that are available to you. We encourage you to join us tomorrow at 10 a.m. Pacific Time for another edition of The Revelation of Jesus with Rick Sterling. So on behalf of Spirit of Truth Ministry, this is Dennis Neufeld saying so long for now. We'll see you all tomorrow. Have a blessed day.